We're heading to Brooklyn. That would be Brooklyn, New York, for noted author Ron Lieber joins us. He has written a book called The Price You Pay for College. Ron, good morning. And that is, it's a big price, isn't it?
Well, I mean, those list prices sure have gotten big. You know, even at the state schools, the retail price, the rack rate has gotten pretty high. And, you know, God help you if you're trying to send your kid to a private institution out of state. You know, these prices can seem awfully high. And so I'm trying to help people make sense of it.
Yeah. How do you do that? I guess you have set up kind of a roadmap.
I'm trying. So first of all, people need to understand who pays what and why. And these list prices, which can seem pretty high, you know, even in East Lansing, even in Ann Arbor, you know, there are discounts available. So the fact of the matter is that about 90% of American undergraduates get some kind of discount off the list price. And there's two ways to think about it. There's the discount that you get because of your financial need, right? Because you don't have enough saved or you don't earn enough to pay full freight. Mm-hmm. Or there are discounts that come from so-called merit, which usually has to do with, you know, your GPA in high school, grade point average, or your test scores. And so, you know, it starts with knowing how the system works, how the financial aid system works, and how to begin to navigate it so you can attempt to predict what it might cost your family.
How do you advise people to really get going into this process to assess, Ron, how you're going to get the best bang for your buck, the best value for your dollar?
Well, I think one big part of assessing value and extracting value from this crazy system is that you have to ask yourself some tough questions about what you or what your kid is going to college for in the first place, right? Because college can be a lot of different things. College can be, you know, a wild ride on an intellectual roller coaster where your brain is disassembled and reassembled into a better version of itself by expert instructors, right? That's number one. Number two, So college could also be about kinship, right? It's finding those sorority sisters or fraternity brothers, or you know, the people in the entrepreneurship club, the people who are going to be your people, hopefully for life, right? The ones who will stand up for you at your wedding and carry your casket at your funeral and help you at every other step along the way, and also the mentors, the grown-ups, the professors, the administrators, the deans, the men and women of faith, the ministers and the rabbis at these schools, right, who will also impact you and help you become a better version of yourself. And then, of course, it's about the credential, right, and what that credential means in the marketplace for 22-year-olds, the marketplace for entry-level labor, right? And yours may be, you know, a family where the 18-year-old's going to college for the first time, right? And what you're really seeking to do is to get a credential that will firmly establish your kid in the middle class or higher in a recession-proof, you know, career that maybe is different from yours. Or, yeah, your kid may be reaching for the stars, right? Maybe your kid is some kind of finance genius and wants to be the first kid, you know, from your high school to go to the Wharton School of Business as an undergraduate at the University of Pennsylvania, right? In which case that may require a lot more money and a lot more planning. So you've got to figure out, first of all, what are you trying to get out of college? Because once you know that, then you can go hunting for value. But first you got to ask yourself those tough questions.
But what if your kid smokes pot and eats potato chips all day?
Well, that kid probably isn't ready for college, right? And there's no rule saying, yeah. I mean, there's no rule saying that everybody's got to go to college. You know, we've got a shortage in the United States, or a looming shortage of skilled tradespeople in all sorts of industries.
Sure.
And, you know, that can be a great way to make a living. And then, you know, the fact of the matter is, right, is that, as you allude to, many 18-year-olds just have no business going to college. And I don't know who it was that decided here in the United States that, you know, 18 is when we were going to ship these kids off right after high school. You know, in a lot of other countries in the world that are, you know, as developed as the United States is, or as advanced economically, people don't go to college at 18. They do something else for a year or two. You know, there's a couple years of military service, or, you know, you go work for a while or do something else. And only then, after, you know, a year or two of maturity and experience in the real world, do you go to college, right? And so we could do with a lot more of that here in the United States, so people get their fill of marijuana and potato chips.
Why does college cost so much, Ron?
Well, the big reason college costs so much is, at least on the public side, it's a decline in state subsidies, right? So when those folks, in the capital there, hit a recession, as they are now with, tax revenues lowered due to the pandemic, or 10 or 12 years ago during the housing crisis, we had a similar thing going on. The easiest thing to do, the easiest budget cut to make, is to the state university system, because then it is families that are generally more affluent than average that are bearing the brunt of the resulting tuition freezes. And it's kind of an indirect tax hike, but on people who in theory can afford it. And if it means more borrowing for the students, well, at least college-educated people with good salaries who are going to be making that up, right? So that's what happens on the public side. But in general, both on the public and on the private side, these colleges are filled with highly trained people. And the schools that we think that we want for our teenagers are the kinds of places where there are a lot of highly skilled people to whom our kids have ready access, right? And so those people need to be paid. And if you want a lot of them, 60, 65, 70, 75% of your budget at any given college or university is going to be made up by people and their salaries and their benefits. So we could try to cut that, right? Use cut-rate instructors, have fewer deans, but we as consumers of higher education might not like the result.
Ron, what about a two-year school? Is that a good place to start? A lot of kids could live at home, and if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to do it if you're not completely sure what you want, or you're not completely sure what you're ready, whether you're ready. Now, your parents have to be willing to keep you there for a couple more years. And if you've got to pay your way, contribute towards rent or contribute towards food, that might mean working. And if you work, that may mean you don't have control of your academic schedule. So here's why that's important, right? If you're looking for a community college to help you save money, the way the community college does that is if you get in and get out in 2 years and transfer to the state university with all of your credits intact, so you can get out of there in 2 years. Because if it takes you 6 or 7 years, you probably haven't saved very much money on tuition, and you're delaying your arrival in the workplace with a bachelor's degree where you can earn a lot more money. So it's just important to, have a really good head of steam and a sort of a type A approach to making sure that you're getting all of the credits you need as quickly as possible with a really good advisor at that two-year school who can help you stay on track.
Ron, what about so many people, they're living paycheck to paycheck, and your kid graduates from high school. You're not ready to dole out a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, this is an issue for an ever larger number of Americans. And if you can't save anything or you are unable to contribute, no shame, no blame from these quarters. And if that's the situation that you're in and you're able to keep your 18-year-old at home for a while, then community college is going to be the way to go. And hopefully, if you're in that situation financially, you're qualifying for a fair amount of need-based aid, right? So you have some grants coming your way that you won't need to pay back. And quite often, if you qualify for the federal Pell Grant, right, for families that, are in lower income categories, that grant can be enough to pay for most or all of tuition at community college. So, you get 2 years of credit done, and then you head off to the state university, and hopefully you can, earn enough money working part-time and full-time in the summers, plus your federal loans, to get through there without a crazy amount of debt. So it is doable, but it requires a plan, it requires knowing the system, and that is what I'm trying to help people to crack, right? That system that's complex and sometimes opaque and requires some plain English unraveling.
Yeah, you talked about the University of Alabama. They spent just $10 million on merit aid in 2006. They're up to $140 million now.
Yeah, so a lot of what's going on out there, won't make much sense to people. But, at the University of Alabama, because they had a, cut in state subsidies, they realized that there were a lot of, kids out there in America of above average affluence who could be lured away from, you know, other states, you know, to come down there, you know, with big discounts and a pat on the head saying, you know, you're an academic superstar. And so they've been throwing money at, you know, above average students, right? And so, you know, they're probably not going to be able to lure anybody away from Ann Arbor, you know, even at their cut rate prices. But might they lure someone away from, you know, Western or Eastern, you know, who's going to go into the honors program there? They might. And, you know, are the local universities going to suffer? Well, they could. So many kids left the state of Illinois that the state legislature, for Alabama, that the state legislature had to create a 25 million dollar pile of money to essentially buy these kids back with bigger and better scholarships.
Ron, another thing I'd like you to address is the situation we have now, kids getting out of college and they're looking, they're staring at, you know, $100,000, $150,000 in debt, and immediately they are in a huge hole that some of them, it takes maybe a decade to dig out of.
Yeah, so, you know, here are the facts on the kind of student loan burden that the average undergraduate is facing. There are, you know, a small handful of cases kind of on the outer edges where people are signing up for all the federal loans they can get and some private loans from banks with their parents, and they end up $100,000 in debt. This does happen. But the average amount of student loan debt is, you know, roughly, let's call it $26,000, $28,000, $30,000. That seems like a lot. But that is just below the limit of what the federal government will allow students to borrow on their own. And if they borrow that much, and if they finish, and finishing is crucial, right? Because if you don't finish, then you've got the debt, but not the earning power. It comes from the degree, right?
Right.
Works both worlds. If you finish and if you stay under the federal loan limits, the repayment programs that are available to you as a borrower from the federal student loan program will allow you to adjust your payments according to your income. So if you graduate into a recession and you can't get a job, your payments will go down as long as you file the right paperwork. So it is possible to stay out of trouble as long as you don't borrow more than whatever the federal government will let you have.
That $30,000 sounds awful low to me.
Yeah, you're exactly right to point that out. And there's a lot of hand-wringing in Washington and in policy circles over whether that's the right amount, right? Because, you know, if you're paying the retail price over 4 years and you're not getting any discounts at, you know, Michigan State, right, it could cost $100,000 over 4 years or so with room and board and everything else. So $30,000 isn't going to get you there, right? So you have to hope that your parents can pitch in out of current income, that you can make some money along the way, that there might be some, you know, grants available that you don't have to pay back. But you are right to point out that $30,000 is not enough. And, you know, the government expects that families will be able to contribute whether or not they are able to and whether or not they are willing to.
Yeah. Ron, tell the folks how they can get a hold of your book, and you must be on a website somewhere they can look at it.
Indeed. The Price You Pay for College is available anywhere that books are sold. I always encourage people to go seek it out at an independent bookstore, at a local retailer who can order it if they don't have it. And you can find me and learn more about The Price You Pay for College at ronlieber.com. That's LIEBER, ronlieber.com.
Ron, great job. Thanks for stopping by.
Hey, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Good luck with the book, The Price You Pay for College, with Ron Lieber.